What's going on, Eagles Nation? Welcome into another edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast. Louis DiBiase here on this Monday edition of the show, alongside my co-host, as always, Mr. Gino Camilleri. Gino, weren't on the show yesterday for the post game. Late night pod, had to get one out there. How you feeling after a heartbreaking loss in New Orleans?
Yeah, unfortunately, it was a long day for me. I had a funeral to go to, a little somber and downtrodden, but then we go into that Eagles game and just made the day even worse. So I was a little emotionally distraught. But when I let everything sink in and I took a look at from 30,000 feet at where this team has come from 2016 to this run that we went on, it's just truly remarkable. I said to my girlfriend yesterday after the end of that game, I said, you've been a fan for, 3 years now? You've not experienced the ups and downs of being an Eagles fan. I've been a fan for 18 years, and I just remember the four straight NFC Championship games with that Super Bowl, losing there, the heartbreak of seeing McNabb go down, the heartbreak of the Dream Team, the year with Mike Vick when he throws that interception against Green Bay. The list goes on and on, and it's like, we've been here before. But the thing is, we're so close to that excellence that we can taste it. And now that Philly has this taste in their mouth for excellence, we are going to that new norm that Doug Peterson is talking about. And it's an excellent step in the right direction. And I almost feel at ease after that game yesterday. And I feel like this team is headed for once in a very long time in the perfect direction, moving towards the building blocks of having a team that can win not just for 1 or 2 years, but 6, 7, 8 years. And that's the goal ultimately. And I think we're finally getting in that direction.
Yeah, look, I think I'm with you. It was kind of a, you know, being able to take a deep breath after, because you look at last season and this season, I kind of jumble it into one just massive run. And with all the chaos that happened in this 2018 season, you know, you're kind of just holding your breath throughout it because, you know, it seemed like it was over after that Dallas loss and then they rattle off, you know, three straight games and they make the playoffs. You're kind of just holding your breath through it all, seeing all the scenarios play out and fall right in the favor of the Eagles. But now it's kind of, man, all the chaos is just done with. And it's not like, you know, that Dream Team where you could see that window was closed. Like, that was really Andy Reid's final stand. Or, you know, winning the Super Bowl last year obviously made this easier, and there's just so much optimism for next year because you know this team is still going to be a powerhouse in the NFL. Like, that final stretch with Foles, beating the Rams, beating the Texans, beating the Redskins, taking down the number one defense on the road in the wild card, almost beating the number one seed Saints in New Orleans, which I think is the toughest environment the Eagles have played in a long time. It convinced us again, it at least reassured me, that this team is still one of the top NFL powers in the league. And that's something that you didn't have in 2013 when the Saints drove down the field and beat Chip Kelly's rookie, you know, his first year, a second year, Nick Foles, taking that team down. Or, you know, in 2010, like you mentioned, with Michael Vick, the comeback player of the year, it seemed like those opportunities, the next year, you weren't really sure where the future of the team was going. Where right now, I have never been more convinced, I've never been more confident heading into a season outside of last year, of course, that this team is going to be a contender for years to come. So, you know, obviously, I think the game itself in a nutshell is frustrating just because of the factors of how they lost it. But overall, like you said, you mentioned from where they are now going back to 2016, I don't know how you can be anything but joyous towards where this team is headed and what they've done, what they've accomplished in this 3 year span of the Doug Peterson era and Howie Roseman 2.0 manning the front office.
It's really just been a resurgence of the culture of this organization as a whole from the end of the Andy Reid era, moving into Chip Kelly, where the team really was, they were trying to do something innovative and it didn't work and they didn't grow a culture. And now you look after yesterday's game, Alshon Jeffrey drops that ball, and who's the first person to go up to him? It's Doug Peterson. Yep. Who's the first person to greet every single player before they went into the locker room? Doug Peterson.
I loved that, man. That's something Chip Kelly would have never done.
No, and it makes you proud to be an Eagles fan, and that's why I felt so at ease when I saw those things. It's because we weren't in disarray where you had, when Chip Kelly was here, you had LeSean McCoy taking shots at him, like about those stupid drinks they used to make and all that stuff. And now everybody is saying how they want to play for Doug Peterson. I saw a report today. I don't remember who it was from, but they said that people are saying they want to come play for Doug. They love this culture. They want to come play for Doug Peterson. They want to play for Philadelphia, and they want to play for this fan base that embraces everybody. You look at Elshon, you go look at any of the videos and the tweets underneath it. You see nothing but, Elshon, you didn't let us down. Like, you're our boy. You did great. You have nothing to feel bad about. And that just shows you how much this team means to the city and how much these players understand that and appreciate that. And literally when they say, we all we got, we all we need, that's what it is. And Philadelphia is becoming this powerhouse of a football team, as you said. And they're just getting started, Lou. And that's why I feel so great, is because they came into this game with 12 guys on the IR. A mess load got beat up in this game. Michael Bennett, Fletcher Cox, Rasul Douglas goes out. The list goes on and on. And they were still resilient enough to hold one of the best offenses in the NFL, one of the best teams in the NFL, to 20 points in the divisional round of a playoff, and were seconds away from marching down the field and beating them. And it just shows that it's the next man up. It's the next man up. It's the next man up. And they're finally developing a culture of winning, and you can see it forming in front of our eyes, and it is the new norm. And you saw Doug Peterson's face. Unlike Jason Garrett, who's sitting in his press conference smiling and clapping, Doug Peterson showed the disappointment, and he showed that these players need to be held accountable to get to that next level, because they've been there before, and that's the only thing that they want. And I feel such in a better mood than I did yesterday, and I really know that 2019, these guys are going to be right back up and at it, getting back into this playoffs and making a deep run.
Yeah, that's the thing too, is you look at the end of the Andy Reid era with that dream team, at least you didn't have that team chemistry. And then you look at the Chip Kelly era and what he tried doing in 2015, he didn't really have the talent. Whereas right now, I mean, again, after the 2013 playoff loss, you didn't know if that team was going to be back next year. You look at the talent on defense, or the lack thereof, outside of the front four. I mean, you were encouraged about Fletcher Cox that year, and they still had a pretty good pass rush with Brandon Graham and Connor Barwin in that 3-4. But like this year, you have that trust in the front office. You have that trust in the coaching staff. Like you said, I loved seeing Nick Foles and Doug Peterson instantly go up to Alshon Jeffrey and console him about that, because that had to have been heartbreaking for Alshon. And they have the talent, too. That's the thing, is we have guys like Rasul Douglas and guys like Cravion LeBlanc, who just played lockdown from that second Giants game up until this final Saints game. And you have a guy like LeBlanc playing lights out in the slot. And, of course, you have the quarterback position pretty much set for the next 10 years with Carson Wentz, and a lot of the talent around him already locked up for years to come up front on the offensive line and with the skill positions. It's hard to not feel, again, anything but encouraged about the future of this team. And look, the fans know it. These fans get a terrible rep from the national media, from people that truly don't understand this fan base. It's a stupid narrative that forms about how bad our fan base is.
It's the worst narrative in the NFL.
Yeah, it's absolute garbage. You see how some of the Bears fans treated Cody Parkey last week, and then you see Eagles fans, look, they're smart. Yeah, they're going to get on guys like Chip Kelly if they don't perform after 3 years, after blowing up the roster to shape it in his image, and then he flames out. You're damn right the fans are going to get on them for that. If the team is not performing up to standards, these fans are just brutally honest, but they also know when not to. They're not just harsh, terrible fans that don't have an understanding for anything. They knew Alshon Jeffrey has been one of the most important parts of this team winning a Super Bowl last year and getting to the second round this year. I don't think he's had, in these five playoff games the past 2 years, a game under 60 receiving yards. He saves his best performances for the playoffs, and when it matters most, not just even in the playoffs, but the Rams game and the Texans game. Without Alshon Jeffrey, the Eagles aren't in the playoffs, and the fans see that, they understand that. And yeah, Alshon Jeffrey, that ball went right through his hands, but you didn't see fans getting on him because they know how important Alshon is to this team and how fluky really that was, because Alshon only had two other drops the entire year. So, you know, the fan base, it's a terrible narrative that's formed around the media, and truthfully, it's embarrassing.
Yeah, I've been thinking about that for a while, how I want to write a piece on other fan bases and how Philadelphia really isn't so bad in the grand scheme of things. But we're not going to get on the bad about this. This is a time to celebrate what this team has done and celebrate where we are. Because I just think back, and you see those old videos. They showed one of Nick Foles when he led that drive against Tampa. I think that was last week against the Bears. They showed that clip. And you see other clips throughout history, the McNabb years, and how we were just so close. And then we just came crashing down back to back to reality and realize that we didn't have this winning franchise, and what we've been doing for so many years back to 1960 has just not worked. And they just needed to get over that hump, and they finally did it. And Doug Peterson was the man for the job, and every single player on this on that team, 17 and 18, even 16, because that helped build these 2 years. It just shows you what went into it and the amount of talent and the amount of guts and the amount of pain that these guys played through. Look at Fletcher Cox, was barely walking, but he knew he had to make an impact in that game. They tweeted, I think Jimmy Kemski tweeted it, that Rasul Douglas came sprinting out of the locker room yesterday. These guys want to play for each other, and you hear how great they talk about each other and how nobody says anything bad, and everybody trusts Nick Foles, everybody trusts Fletcher Cox. They know what they have, and that they know when they come together, they are one of the best teams in football. And look, come yesterday, they were one of the five teams left in football because they played the late game. That is not an easy task to do. Is it a moral victory? Yes. Do we like to celebrate moral victories? No, but it's a step in the right direction. And they just came off a Super Bowl year. Yes, they celebrated too hard, but now they know that they can't do that anymore, and they know they have to get to work. And if you give this team a full offseason to prepare with Carson Wentz healthy, with at least 10 draft picks right now, probably going to be more.
Especially you're going to lose Foles. If they can move Nick Foles, it might be more.
Yep, exactly. Howie Roseman never settles for anything less than the best. In free agency, you're going to lose guys, but the cap situation isn't as bad as people make it out to be. They're going to move things around, and they're going to continue to develop and develop depth at positions, which you've seen all year long with guys like Cravon, LeBlanc, just names that you would have never have expected. This scouting staff has been so great the past 3 years, and it's only going to get better, and there's so much positive to come out of this year and moving forward when you have a fully healthy team, a fully healthy Carson Wentz, fully healthy Fletcher Cox, a load of draft picks, a load of playoff experience from your youngest guys on the team all the way up to your veterans. This team has nothing to look, put their head down about, because coming off of yesterday, outside of that drop, they battled right to the end against a team that embarrassed them, and they're really going. They'll get their redemption on New Orleans, but yesterday wasn't the day. It'll come, but yesterday wasn't the day. That story is going to be finished sometime soon, but these Eagles are coming back, and they'll be back next year. Promise me. I'll promise you that.
Yeah, it's hard to be upset about the loss, and just, again, you got to be so encouraged about where this team is going. Again, the game itself was frustrating. I mean, they really had it.
Uh-huh.
Up 14-0. You talk about the fake punt that the Saints converted. You talk about Brandon Graham's strip sack, not being able to jump on that football. Both of those plays go the other way, and the Eagles are in the opposing territory and could maybe go up by 21. And then, of course, the Alshon Jeffrey drop. Situational coaching, I thought, was off, especially with Jim Schwartz. I thought the defense played a hell of a game. Jim Schwartz had, to me, a great season. We got on him a lot for his situational coaching. I thought, again, that was a shortcoming today. But for the most part, you got to be happy with his job this year with the injuries that he was dealt with on defense. But the situational coaching, again, kind of came back where, you know, they kept rushing four, and it just seemed like they could not hit home, especially on that 12-minute drive by the Saints. The Eagles could not get there, and the secondary was getting shredded up regardless of if there was eight guys in coverage or seven. They needed to bring some heat a little bit more, maybe a couple blitzes here and there, just, you know, pick your spots. They didn't do it a whole lot. Injuries, of course, really caught up with them. You know, you saw Wendell Smallwood. There was a lot of meat left on the bones with some of the holes he was hitting.
Oh,
whereas,
yeah,
you know, he hit a 4 or 5 yard run, and you're like, okay, that's a good on first down. I'll take that to set up second and five. But I'm telling you, like, if you had LeSean McCoy still, or you had a serious impact running back, which hopefully we do in the offseason, those 5 yard runs could turn into 15 to 20 yard runs. So there's a bunch of stuff that we're going to get into in the offseason that I can't wait for. You know, and the need of a running back is definitely going to be one. You saw that, or at least I noticed that against the Saints. There were a lot of missed opportunities, but again, overall, I mean, we were the sixth seed on the road against probably the best team in football overall this year. I mean, the Chiefs were up there, the Rams, the Patriots, but I thought the Saints overall this year were the most dangerous team in football. One of the hardest places you'll ever play in the NFL. And a sixth seed with all the injuries they had, a team that got blown out by the Saints 48-7 this exact year, had an opportunity with 2 minutes left. Again, like, let's go back to when they're 4-5, 4-6. If I were to tell you that this was the scenario to end the season, you can't complain about it.
Yeah, a lot of people going into this week were saying that they were playing with house money, and they really were, because, Lou, we don't need to mention all those games that we wrote them off. We've said it time and time again, but going back, starting with Los Angeles, everybody thought they were going to lose the Rams game. Everybody thought they were going to lose the Texans game. Nobody knew if the Bears wanted to beat Minnesota. Nobody thought they'd win the Chicago game. They just kept defying the odds over and over and over again. They're just... It leaves me speechless. I really don't understand how they keep doing it. But it's that never give up and that winning attitude that they don't accept anything but the best. And when you're down to your 10th cornerback, you lose your all-pro right guard, in my opinion, all-pro right guard to an Achilles injury. Your best defensive tackle goes down. Sometimes injuries are just too hard to overcome, and with a Saints team that was relatively healthy for the most part outside of that Sheldon Rankins injury, their whole O-line was healthy, all their receivers, their running backs were healthy, their defensive line was healthy, their secondary was healthy. They had everything going in the right direction, and for them to barely squeak a win out against an Eagles team that was so depleted at so many areas and playing with not a backup quarterback but their second-string quarterback just on paper – It's a win in my eyes. You know, it was playing with house money, and this team won in my eyes. They battled till the very end. You know, being on the field for so long against Drew Brees really wears you down. When you don't have a guy like Fletcher Cox in there the whole game, it's really going to get tough. When Rasul Douglas goes down, who is your best coverage cornerback until that point in the game goes down, things just weren't looking up for them, and they had it in their hands. They were up 14-0, driving. Nick throws a bad interception, and that's how momentum works in the NFL. Just two, three things go the wrong way like they did for the Eagles. Good teams are going to capitalize, and the better team in New Orleans came out on top.
Let's take a quick break here on the Lockdown Eagles podcast. When me and Gino come back, we're going to get into some of the positives of the game. Who stood out? And then our third segment, going to kind of just take a look back down memory lane from 2016 up until this point. Got to feel good where the Eagles are, just how they've really built this team into a title contender for years to come. That's coming up right here on the Lockdown Eagles podcast. All right, everybody, welcome back to Lockdown Eagles. Louis DiBiase and Gino Camilleri. Gino, before we get into who stood out for the Eagles in this game, I understand the Eagles trolled the Minnesota Vikings to death last year after they beat them in the NFC Championship.
I know, you're upset
game.
About this. We need to talk.
I would understand the Saints getting so on the Eagles for this win and the trolling. Look, I like the trolling. I really do. I think bringing in the NBA kind of pettiness to the NFL is really fun. I like that it brings, you know, teams from different divisions into these rivalries. I mean, to me right now, the Eagles' biggest rivals aren't even in the division. It's the Minnesota Vikings and the New Orleans Saints. But why the Saints have been so after this Eagle, it wasn't just that they were playing Dreams and Nightmares in the locker room, which infuriated me. Why?
Why? That was their song last year. Who even cares? We won the Super Bowl. They're so somber and downtrodden, and they lost to Minnesota. Like, that's not our fault.
But that's what I'm saying, is why were they trash-talking us? Even, I mean, Kamara said that they would have destroyed us in the NFC title game. He said that in the offseason. Then they were making fun of the ski masks. They blew us up 48-7. It's not like we beat them and they were trying to get revenge. Like, why they have been so petty towards the Eagles? Like, it's just, and it's not even original. Like, they're just taking all of the Eagles stuff, like Ingram and Kamara wearing the ski masks after the game. The Eagles, at least, I mean, they beat Minnesota in the NFC title game, but before that, you didn't see the Eagles trolling Minnesota. The Saints have been doing it all season long. I don't know if it has to do with they're kind of salty. They feel like if they got in the title game last year, they would have beat the Eagles, and this justifies it, which I don't think is the case at all, because I think the Eagles last year would have still beat the Saints in the NFC title.
Oh, they weren't losing to anybody.
Yeah, at home, they were not losing to the Saints. I'm all for a good troll job. I have nothing against the Saints doing that, but they've been on the Eagles all year, and it's the second round, and the Eagles are a 6 seed. If this is your Super Bowl, fine, but you got 2 big games still ahead, my friends. It drove me nuts, dude.
Yeah, it's kind of funny that I'm taking this quote, trolling Jason Garrett, while we're talking about trolling, but I love saying when Dak Prescott was talking about when the Eagles were smack-talking him, and he said, losers focus on winners and winners focus on winning. And I think that's funny because the Saints haven't won anything and they
Yeah.
celebrated big time, like they won a big game.
I was gonna say,
Yes,
at
it
least
was.
ours, we were going to the Super Bowl. Like, this was a second round game.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say to preface this, is that they better hope they win the Super Bowl because they are going to look like clowns if they don't. I don't get hung up on it. We deserved it. Like, so be it. They're still upset about the Minnesota Miracle for some reason. Don't care, don't care. Don't care at all. Until they win the Super Bowl, they'll prove me wrong in my eyes. But they have a big test ahead of them. They're a good team. I'm not going to take anything away from them.
I don't mean to discredit them.
No, you can't. I mean, Marshon Lattimore proved his worth for being one of the best cornerbacks in football yesterday, plain and simple. That interception on Zach Ertz, I'd say maybe three other corners in the league make that play. That was just full extend, played it perfect, tracked the ball over his head. It was beautiful. Their defensive line is coming up huge. Cam Jordan, unbelievable talent. Drew Brees, it's his year. How many times have I said to you that Drew Brees is either one, going to beat the Chargers, which are now out of the playoffs, and redeem himself over the team that let him go, or he's going to finally get that win over Brady? I've said it time
Yeah,
and
it's
time
true.
again, and I finally think it's going to come true. And this is the team. That team is good, man. Michael Thomas slipping to the second round is one of the biggest and most ridiculous things in the NFL history. I really don't understand that. That guy is surreal. Absolutely lit us up for nearly 400 yards, or over 400 yards in two games this season. And Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram, just when you think you have them shut down, they take off the top, and they're one of
Yeah,
the
one of the
most
most
explosive
explosive.
offenses in football
Oh
with
yeah.
a very
Very
solid
solid.
defense too. You can't take anything away from them there.
They're a good team for sure. I'm not trying to cry like the Minnesota Vikings last year. It's just like we started trolling the Vikings because they were complaining about how brutal our fans were, and they went downtown and started pretending like they were taking over the city in the Rocky Steps when they had only like 40 fans. So we rubbed it in their faces. But the Saints have just, I don't know, they've been after the Eagles the whole time. It's like, dude, if you beat us in the NFC title game, I'd get it. Or if we took you down last year. But you, like you said, you better hope you win next week, or they're going to look like absolute clowns.
Yeah, I really think so. But, dude, until we beat them in the playoffs, we can't say anything.
I
Like,
know, I know.
we
What
had
are
the
you?
horror of 06, 2013.
I know, man. It's all these. It's the
Well,
Saints. Every playoff game, it's they're the
they're our
heartbreakers.
kryptonite.
Yeah, seriously.
It's
So
unfortunate.
in this game, you know, there's a lot of negatives. There's a lot of stuff that'll drive you nuts just looking at some of the missed throws by Foles, the fake punt, the Graham strip sack we couldn't grab, the injuries. There's a lot to this game. You're like, damn, if that just went this way, we'd be in the NFC title game. But I feel like there was a lot of good. Who were some of the players that stood out to you?
Yeah, I think there were some good quality play from the Eagles. I think Alshon Jeffrey, outside of the drop, played pretty well. I mean,
Oh, yeah.
Marshon Lattimore is a tough matchup. He got open at times. He did what he needed to do. I think Brandon Graham had a very, or excuse me, Brandon Graham did have a very good game. That strip sack was unbelievable. If he picks that up, that could have turned the tides of the entire game, put them in great field position. Michael Bennett thought played solid. He came up big, knowing that they needed to get to that rush on that third down play to get them out of field goal range, which gave them a chance to win the game. And he blew that play up from the start, and he played well all throughout the game. And I think the one name that you didn't hear, Rasul Douglas, for a good reason, played
Played
very
very
well
well.
because he in coverage he's been excellent. And last but not least, Fletcher Cox. How much of a difference was it when he was on the field versus when he was in the locker room? It's just so evident that there's so many resources allocated from an offense to Fletcher Cox that allows everybody else to flourish. And when he's off the field, the Saints were just driving up and down the field. And I want him 100% healthy next year because he's a world beater and
The
he
minute
does
he went off
everything
the
that
field,
team needs.
yeah, the minute he went off the field, dude, you saw like Kamara before didn't they couldn't get anything going in the run game. Fletcher Cox goes down, suddenly they start making big plays up the middle.
Yeah, it was evident, and you saw it as soon as he came off the field. And same with Rasul Douglas when he goes off the field. Your Josh Hawkins, you ever heard of him until yesterday?
Nope, I had
Probably
no
not.
idea he was, truthfully, and I should know, but Hawkins goes out there and I forgot Sidney Jones was inactive. And I'm like, where's Sidney Jones? And then I realized that he wasn't dressed for the game. And they had, like, this is what I'm talking about, situational coaching. There was a play in the second half where Hawkins was one-on-one with Michael Thomas on the right side and no safety over the top. I mean, how do you have your 10th string corner covering probably the best receiver in football, or at least top three, one-on-one? And it was insane, but I'm glad you mentioned Rasul Douglas. The quarterbacks in the divisional round, the lowest passer rating was Drew Brees when targeting Rasul Douglas. Rasul has come so far this year. Yeah, he was number one. Hawkins was last, of course. Rasul, though, has come so far from even that first Saints game where Michael Thomas was shredding him up. They wanted him on Douglas the entire game. This time, our guy Ben Solak from Bleeding Green Nation, former Lockdown Eagles host, love his work over there. He showed the chart on Twitter where Michael Thomas was basically avoiding Rasul Douglas around the field.
They lined him up on that right side against Devontae a lot.
Yeah, they were not using him against Rasul, and that's a lot of respect, because before these games where he's just been on a roll in coverage and with tackling, the Cowboys wanted Amari Cooper going after Rasul. The Saints wanted Michael Thomas against Rasul Douglas, and now people were treating him almost as a CB1, and I got to be proud because it's the brand and I love Rasul Douglas and I'm such a big fan of his talent. But man, the secondary has a bright future with Cravion, with Rasul, with still Sidney Jones, still to me is the most talented corner.
I forgot to mention Cravion. Like, he freaking picked that ball off on the first play.
You know what? For what it's worth, Avante Maddox, he got burned a lot, but there were some great plays one-on-one where the safeties had to go help Hawkins and Maddox was kind of on an island along the sidelines, man-on-man. He made some nice plays. I'm still very encouraged. I think Maddox, truthfully, I want him on the outside next year. I don't know what the secondary scenarios. I can't wait to get into it with you in the offseason, kind of talking about how the secondary is going to shape up, because Rodney McLeod should be coming back. We'll see. Sidney Jones should be back healthy. Jalen Mills on top of Rasul, LeBlanc, and Maddox. You got to think that this cornerback group finally seems like it has long-term stability and short-term production, where we haven't had that in 10, 15 years.
Finally, right? We thought we had a solid group coming in this year. You have Darby and Mills starting, and now nobody's even talking about Jalen Mills. Like, the guy had a hell of a season.
We're talking about maybe moving. We might be moving him. We might have to move him. Position-wise, like, someone's got to eventually move to safety if you want all these guys on the field.
Yeah, they're going to figure something out. I don't know what they're going to do, but finally for them to realize the talent of Rasul Douglas was great. And one point that I wanted to mention, because you said how great he's been playing as of late, is that there was a story that came out that said that Fletcher Cox came up to him.
Yeah, I love the story.
And said that he needed to elevate his game. And he did since that point in time. And that made me think of the story last year in that Giants game. We all know that famous clip of Jake Elliott when he missed that field goal and Jason Peters comes up to him and he puts his hand on him and he goes, "No more misses."
Yeah.
And he elevated his play. And it shows you how much the leaders in that locker room are respected. And it's a cool story to hear. And it just shows you that if maybe you have all that talent, but maybe you just need a spark, and maybe Fletcher Cox was that spark for Rasul Douglas, and it definitely showed, because they always say a good offensive lineman and a good cornerback, when you don't hear their name, they're having good games.
100%.
And you didn't hear much of Rasul Douglas's name at all yesterday, minus of when he was in the medical tent. That's about the only time you heard his name called.
Yeah, look, this secondary was not the reason that this season's over right now. They actually were part of the reason it was saved. And Rasul was talking with NBC Philly, and he basically was talking about how him and Cravion LeBlanc and Avante Maddox, they did not want to be the reason that these veterans were not going to be able to play in a playoff game, where Jason Peters wasn't going to finally get to play in a playoff game for the first time since, 2013? And finally win one against the Chicago Bears with him on the field. It was awesome to have Peters part of that Super Bowl team last year, but, you know, having him on the field was awesome. And Rasul was saying, like, they did not want to let those guys down, including Fletcher Cox, who really was the one that lit a fire under the secondary. And I remember the exact story you're talking about. It was right after that Sunday night game against Dallas, where Douglas had an atrocious day in coverage and in tackling. Where he is now on tackling, like, if you go to the film and watch him trying to shed blockers in that Dallas game, or really not try, compared to what he is now, basically leading the team in tackles every single week, that's all of it. Like you said, a lot of it has to do with Fletcher Cox and the leader that he is in this locker room. And Fletcher Cox too, he's helped guys like Timmy Jernigan. I don't know what his future is going to be. Not most of his money now is not guaranteed because of the injury in the summer. Timmy Jernigan was starting to look like Timmy Jernigan of the first half of 2017 the past couple of weeks, right?
Yeah, and that's one big thing that I want the Eagles to address is that interior off defensive line, because even though Haloti Ngata played great in the run game yesterday, in my opinion, they need youth there. And with the uncertain future of Tim Jernigan, I would love them to address it in a very good draft class. And we'll talk more about that, obviously, as it goes on. But I want to go back to when you mentioned tackling at the corner position. Cravon LeBlanc, dude hits like an absolute steamroller. Yep. He's come up with some massive plays this year. And he's really, somebody tweeted it, he said, this is the modern day Vince Papale. And it's almost to that level that this guy came off the street. That story came out, I think it said that his mom almost didn't even go through with his birth and wanted to get rid of the baby. I forgot who wrote the story about it, but it was crazy. And to just see how much suffering this guy has overcome, he gets cut again and he gets claimed by the Eagles, and he comes into this team, a team that thrives on allowing people to play their role and let their personality shine. And this kid's personality, and whose personality is an absolute dog to go out there and battle every single snap. You saw it. You saw his emotion on the field. He picks off that freaking first. I still can't believe it. You couldn't write a better start for that kid, for this team, for somebody who comes off the street. Nobody even knows who he is. You see him, pans of him a couple weeks ago on the sideline. You're like, who is 34? Now you're like, Cravon LeBlanc. You're shouting from the rooftops for this guy. And it's just wild to me that they just continue to roll in talent time after time after time, just off the street, and they contribute. And there's just so much bright future for everybody on this team. And it just shows you from the guys at the bottom, the now Pumphreys who are signing futures contracts, to Cravon LeBlancs who are getting claimed off of waivers, to guys like Brandon Graham, to Fletcher Cox, to Nick Foles. Everybody contributes in one way or another in this organization, and they just know how to win, and they want to win, and they want to battle. And that's a great identity for this team to be building. And it comes from the heart, from guys like Malcolm Jenkins, who we haven't even talked about, for Fletcher Cox, who we're preaching from the rooftops for, and Carson Wentz. When he comes back, this team is on his shoulders, and he knows it. And these guys know the talent that they have. And I just can't say enough about how proud I am of this team. I'm just it's remarkable how far they've come.
Yeah, Cravon LeBlanc, too, going back to that. I remember we were joking around after the Giants game. We're like, this dude sounds like a made-up player in Madden.
Literally.
We went from that to now talking about how is he not going to be in the starting lineup in 2019 with how well he played down the stretch. So, it's a great problem to have. I'll tell you one thing. The tackling of the cornerbacks for the Eagles the past decade, when you talk about Byron Maxwell and Kerry Williams and Bradley Fletcher and all these different guys, heck, even Asante Samuel's strength was not tackling. To go from that to Rasul, LeBlanc, you know, Avante Maddox, Jalen Mills, this is a strength of the cornerback position for the first time in forever, and it's an extremely bright future in the secondary. Let's take one more break here on the Locked On Eagles podcast. When me and Gino come back, we're going to kind of one last time take a trip down memory lane, this first three-year span of the Doug Peterson, Carson Wentz, Howie Roseman 2.0 era, how far they've come and how they've done it. That's coming up next right here on the Locked On Eagles podcast. All right, everybody, welcome back to Locked On Eagles. Louis DiBiase alongside Gino Camilleri, final segment of this Monday edition, kind of putting a close on the 2018 Eagles season. And it's a little just kind of an ode to the first 3 years, Gino. You know, when you start just from the Doug Peterson hire, nobody thought it was a good hire. He was the worst-ranked head coaching hire of that year, behind guys like Chip Kelly and Sean McDermott. Sean McDermott was, I think, the year after. And then you had guys like Doug Marrone. He's the only one left that's part of that coaching, pretty much free agency, with Adam Gase in Miami. Doug was basically the first underdog of this era. And then, of course, they go and get Carson Wentz. It had to be so perfect. It basically shows what it takes to build a consistent title contender, not just one that can, you know, burst onto the scene, be a six seed, get really hot and win it, and then you just don't make the playoffs pretty much any other year. The Giants basically did that twice. Whereas the Eagles, they are sustained. They are set up to pretty much be a title contender for, I would say, the next, you know, 3 to 5 years, and if not more with Carson Wentz. As long as you have Carson Wentz in the quarterback, you're going to keep changing the talent around him, but he should be able to keep you in contention. And there's just so much that went into it with the coaching of Doug Peterson, the play calling, the staff he put together of Frank Reich and John DeFilippo and Jim Schwartz, and setting up the culture where just the players fall in love with the team and with the coaching staff and with each other, and just being a Philadelphia Eagle. Like you said, there was no pride in being an Eagle from 2012, really, until Chip Kelly got fired, because of all the movement, because of the building basically solely through free agency. When we talk about the dream team and through Chip Kelly in 2015, that totally changed with Doug Peterson, and with how Howie Roseman, all the trades and the draft picks he's made, and you know, the player is overcoming adversity, learning from 2016, building off that in 2017 and 2018. There's so much. There's not just one thing that you can point to as how the Eagles have come so far in just two seasons.
You have to go all the way back to 2016 and the spark that lit this team to go to lead them to where they are. You have a team that is just in shambles after Chip Kelly leaves them with a whole sorts of mess. You're in cap hell with Byron Maxwell. You have Kiko Alonso, who just has no reason to be on this team. You have Sam Bradford, you know, isn't the future of this organization. And there was one man that could handle this task, and his name was Howie Roseman. He goes in there, he gets Doug Peterson in the house with help from Jeffrey Lurie, who I'm very thankful took a bigger part in selecting the coach this go-around as compared to Chip Kelly. You bring him in, you finally decide, since 1999, you haven't drafted a quarterback in the first round. You finally decide after 17 years that you're going to take a shot, and they make a winning move, a move to, quote, mortgage the future for a young gentleman named Carson Wentz. They finally decided that mediocrity was not going to get it done, that picking in those later picks wasn't going to get it done. Those 13 to 22 picks wasn't going to get it done.
Yep.
They needed their franchise guy, and they went and did it. They knew there was a risk. They knew giving up picks was a risk, but they said, we are going to find a way to build a winning franchise around a once-in-a-lifetime quarterback who they think is the guy for the franchise, and everybody else should, because this kid is electric. That was the first spark. They go in, they say, okay, there's an opportunity to get rid of Sam Bradford, who we know isn't the future, and give Carson Wentz an opportunity. They did that. They allowed this young quarterback to get reps. Even though they didn't have a good team, he got reps. They go into the one game that I want to take from that season was that Baltimore game where they went for it for that two-point conversion. Even though they didn't convert, they still had a chance to win the game. Something that would play a role in that 17 season when Doug Peterson was BBD, as they called him, Big Balls Doug, where he would go out and go for it on fourth down, go for two-point conversions. They took chances, and they took chances all throughout that year, even before the year. In free agency, they went and looked for a guy in Alshon Jeffrey who said he wanted to come and play with Carson Wentz in a winning organization. You sign other guys. You make a move for Ronald Darby. You're making moves to build a winner.
They basically started the trade era of the NFL. Like, they weren't afraid to find talent anywhere. Like, most teams wouldn't have gave up picks for a Darby or a Jay Ajayi. They went after young guys that could still make a difference now through trades that the majority of the history of the NFL, it just didn't really happen.
They really innovated this future of how to build a winning franchise, and that's exactly what they're moving to.
They innovated a lot of things, dude. Like, I mean, even going for it on fourth down. Like, Doug Peterson basically started that.
Exactly. And how many teams now have a young quarterback on a rookie contract who they're bringing in offensive weapons and building a sound defense? You can look at the Rams. You can look at the Bears. You could look at teams like the Jets, who are going to do that this offseason. You can look at the Bills, who are going to do that this offseason. You can look at the Chiefs, who are continuing to do that. They can improve their defense, but they have all the weapons on offense. You can look at who else? Green Bay is starting to do that. You have your quarterback. They're starting to innovate, even though it's not on a rookie. They're starting to turn their team around. But they're just figuring out that there's other ways to win football games, and you don't want to be the team. I like to equate it to, you don't want your kid to be the first person to know about Santa Claus, and you don't want them to be the last person to know about Santa Claus. Yeah. Like, you want to be right in that sweet spot, and the Eagles are right in that sweet spot where they're being one of the first teams to get there, but still understanding that you can't fade away from all older elements of the game, and they're really blending both of those two, and they have a great mix of ideologies between Doug Peterson and Howie Roseman, and even Carson Wentz challenges those ideas, and Jeffrey Lurie is involved, and Joe Douglas is involved, and they have so many great minds going into it, and they're not, it's not just Dumb and Dumber arguing against each other. These are guys that are brilliant and challenging each other and saying, okay, we're good, but how can we be great? And you've seen that with moves like Jay Ajayi and Ronald Darby, moving up to get Carson Wentz, bringing in a Tim Jernigan, locking up your core with Zach Ertz and Alshon Jeffrey and Fletcher Cox for years to come, and building from the ground up with solid offensive line and defensive line play.
And continuing to invest in quarterback, man, like bringing in Nick Foles. You see now the Saints traded a third-round pick for Teddy Bridgewater to be their backup. Why? Because you saw what the Eagles did. They did not stop investing in the quarterback position.
You have to, and they were one of the first teams to have three solid quarterbacks because they know that that's where the game is won, at that position.
They finally realized that, man, because they just did not. It seemed like forever.
For so many years, and that, it was, and like, that's when a are they great sign to see.
Yeah, when are they going to fully commit to bringing in that franchise quarterback? You're right. It all started, really, you know, of course, with Doug Peterson getting hired, but getting Carson Wentz was the first sign of, we are done settling for wild card berths. We are going for championships. And that really is when it all started. And it's part of why I'm so clinging to Carson Wentz, because he kind of just represents what this new era of Eagles football is all about.
And that's one of the things that gets me held up on the whole Nick Foles debate. And I don't want to go into an old debate, but for once, in that 2017 season, I want everybody to just go back to like week 6 or 7, after that Carolina game. I know for myself, and I know for many other Eagles fans, we were sitting there and just saying, wow, we have a potential MVP on our team, leading our team, a Aaron Rodgers-esque, a Tom Brady-esque type of player that can put them over the hump. And now we just got away from that, and we moved to this recency bias of the Nick Foles, he was our guy, then he wasn't our guy, now he's our guy again. But where was his ceiling? And I think we kind of saw that with the Eagles of old, that they had that ceiling, that about 80% ceiling. And that's what Nick Foles kind of represents, is that like 80% ceiling, that they can have greatness with everybody else performing well, but they can't have that guy, Nick Foles, bring them to the next level. And Carson Wentz represents that, them, this franchise shedding that label of not being good enough, and creating a label of excellence. And I think Carson Wentz brings that excellence to this team, and they've developed that excellence, and it brought them a Super Bowl, and it's brought them a coach who is excellent, a quarterback who is excellent, a front office that is excellent, an excellent owner, and an excellent culture that this team needed to desperately create. And they desperately have created it, and finally have been moving in the correct direction to create a dynasty, which so many teams covet. Not many teams create it, but this Eagles team is well on its way to becoming the next dynasty in the National Football League.
That's a great way to end it, Gino. That's going to do it for today's edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every single day. Myself, Lou DiBiase, and Gino Camilleri bringing you 5 shows a week right here on the Locked On Eagles Network. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Birds, at DiBiase, LOE, and at Gino_LOE. Check out our written content on LockedOnEagles.com. For my co-host Gino Camilleri, I'm Lou DiBiase. We'll see you again tomorrow, right back here on the Locked On Eagles podcast. Thanks for downloading, thanks for listening, and let's go, Birds.
Fly, Eagles, fly.